You like JCVD? Yeah, you know me. We are here. My name is Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
And we are the Bitter End. And we are at the bitter end.
Oh, we really are. We've done it. We're about to watch the last Universal Soldier film in existence at time of recording. Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning.
It's number 6, mm-hmm. Day of Reckoning.
From 2012.
2012, and when was the last one?
No, this one is 20. This...
No, no, no. When was the one before this one?
Oh, the previous one. Sorry. So we've got, it was 2009. First film was in 1992. What a journey we've been on.
What a
20 years.
What a 20 years. And yeah. It, I mean, 6 movies. We haven't, you know, we're on the precipice of the 6th, Day of Reckoning. And I feel like this has flown by, man.
It really has, but it's been quite a journey. It's been the shortest franchise we've done, but, oh, it's gone some places. It's gone some places in a very small amount of time. But we shouldn't get too deep into the series as a whole just yet, because we've still got this beast to deal with, and we just watched the trailer. How are you feeling about that, Todd?
Well, let me tell you something. I am feeling like I have got a lot to say about this trailer.
I want to hear all those things.
I think I took more notes on this trailer than any other trailer we've watched so far for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Point number one, it's really long. Now, hold on to your butts. I cheated a little, looked up the runtime of the film itself.
Mm.
It's a long film, Tom.
Is it? How long is it?
Just shy of 2 hours, which for a shooty man movie...
Blimey O'Reilly.
Yeah. That's a lot of shooty men. So that is a bit intimidating.
Yep.
This is one of the Universal Soldier films that, as far as I'm aware, according to social media buzz, I believe, has had a bit of a resurgence on DVD already. I think it's a lot of people like it, whether it is for cult reasons or otherwise. I know that there are a lot of people who skipped out Universal Soldiers 2, 3, 4, and 5.
And then came onto straight... this. Yeah, well, I remember when this was coming out. I didn't see it, but I remember like, oh, there's a new Universal Soldier film coming out on DVD. It looks batshit crazy.
And it does look batshit crazy.
Like, the intro of this trailer looks like a horror film.
It looks like a good horror film. There's a little girl and she's like, daddy, daddy, there's monsters in the house. And then it's all these bros and balaclavas, one of whom is a shaved, bald JCVD.
Yeah. So here's the rub, people. From the looks of it, Jean-Claude Van Damme in this is the baddie. Luc Daverneau has gone rogue. Dolph Lundgren is back, and the two of them seem to be leading a army, like a renegade army of Unisols.
There's some really crazy imagery, not just JCVD's shaved head, which clearly makes him look like a villain. Dolph Lundgren's got a sassy red beret, which makes him look like a militant communist poet.
And red, like, eye makeup.
Red eye makeup. And then in these later shots, JCVD has got full-on black metal corpse paint.
Yeah, what the fuck?
It looks brutal.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how this pans out. Other things of note, like he's not the hero. So you've got this new guy, Scott Adkins is the actor, and he seems to be playing a guy who's, I think his family, I'm guessing, are killed by the Universal Soldiers, and then he goes after them. You know who else is in there? With a beard this time, but still a very flat face. It's Mr. Worldwide. It's Pitbull.
Now, Tom, yes, I enjoyed the Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide.
I hope he's got his rad little stabber still.
Oh, he did have a very rad little stabber. Now, just to clarify for some of the listeners, we've had some minor feedback that some people do not necessarily understand the link between MMA fighter The Pitbull.
And why I keep calling him Mr. Worldwide.
Please could you clarify?
You know the pop rap artist Pitbull?
I see.
He calls himself Mr. Worldwide.
Is that because he has that song So International?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, good.
And I don't know why, but I just cannot stop calling this very different Pitbull Mr. Worldwide. And I refuse to stop.
Dude, tar all Pitbulls with the same brush.
Damn right, damn. Oh, Pitbull on Pitbull. Could you imagine? What a fight.
It would be quite short.
It would, yeah, that rad little stabber would just be like...
Not so worldwide now!
Yeah. is there... What else? Oh, the end of this trailer has a bit like, looks like Scott Adkins is fighting JCVD, and JCVD just like swings a machete into the dude's arm.
Jason Voorhees style.
Yeah, and the dude is just kind of like, yeah, what? Bothered? Don't think so. And it's just like, oh, I think this is going to be gnarly.
It sticks in the bone of his forearm. Yeah. He puts his arm up to block it, sticks in the bone.
And he's just like,
He just pulls it out. Don't phase him.
Yeah, I know.
There's that same guy, though. He shows a softer side. There's some shots in the trailer of him sitting on a bed, hugging a teddy bear, having a bit of a cry.
A callback, maybe, to Universal Soldier 2. There's also looks like a bit of like riding a speedboat.
Speedboat through a
bayou. So maybe a little nod and a wink to Universal Soldier the Return.
Well, the ratio last time of speedboat in the trailer to speedboat in the movie was like way off. Like the trailer when we had
it was
before,
a lot of it, wasn't it?
A lot of speedboat, very little in the film. So this time we had like a single shot of a speedboat, which means we're either going to get like two frames. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to go the other way, and it's mainly going to be a speedboat.
Yeah, it's going to be like an 80-minute kind of character study on a speedboat, and then like a bit of action at the end.
I wouldn't
be surprised, because, I mean, obviously Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren are in this trailer quite a lot, but judging from the last film, they may not be in it that much. So we will see.
Only one way to find out.
Yeah, but before we go and find out, Todd, for the final time in season 4, it's time to play the IMDb guessing game, where you were charged with the task of guessing what the IMDb score is for Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning from 2012.
I only hope I'm up to the task, Tom.
I think you can do it. Do you want me to give you a little refresher memory on how the series has gone so far?
Tom, if the listeners will allow it, I think that nothing else would give me more pleasure.
We kicked off with Universal Soldier 1. That got a mean 6. Straight down the line. That's a 6. That's solid. Universal Soldier 2, Brothers in Arms. Oh dear, we're in trouble. 3.
Much deserved.
Picked it up a little bit for Universal Soldier 3, Unfinished Business. 3.3.
That's all thanks to Bert.
Then we're jumping up. The Return. 4.1.
No speedboats.
I got that wrong in the last episode. Sorry, people. Then, yeah, last episode, Regeneration, 5.2.
Mr. Worldwide.
So now, in 2012, what did Day of Reckoning, what did it muster up?
Now, like I said before, I know that this one's quite cult. Before we'd even decided upon covering this season for the podcast, I'm a big Twitter user, and I couldn't get away from this film for a little while. You know, a lot of people espousing it. So I think it's going to go up. I don't think it can possibly compete with the original movie, but I think it's going to go up a fair bit because of the nature of when the internet latches onto something. I'm going to say 5.8.
I respect you, and I like your reasoning. I think it's sound reasoning, but unfortunately, it's another downturn, but not by much. It's a 5.
Ooh. Okay, well, I quite like, there's some poetry in that, that the first film was a straight-on-the-nose 6, and this is a straight-on-the-nose 5.
Yeah, and it veered very far off track, and now it's nearly come home.
I think I have a weird theory that any of the films that are an exact number on the nose, like a something point zero, are, like, more respectable than any that have like a decimal point in
them.
Well,
they're just tidy, aren't they?
There's just something neat, just neat and satisfying about
it's
just, them.
Yeah, it's a bit mucky having a point two on there. So yeah, shall we go and get stuck in?
Mate, let's reach for the bitter end and clasp it with both hands and give it a big kiss on the nose.
Mwah. Mwah.
Hey!
Hey-o.
We cheers. Did it, buddy. Ding. Cheers. Mm-mm. Mm. Ah, one more trip to the bitter end, one more franchise in the can.
Oh, yeah. We have defeated you, Universal Soldier. What cost?
We have stared into the face of the abyss, and the abyss stared right back at us and went, "Hello, I am Jean-Claude Van Damme."
Oh, he does have a face like an abyss in this film. Again, like the last one, he's not in it a lot. He doesn't say a lot, but what he does do is look very sleepy in the most menacing way you can imagine.
you ready for something here, Tom? Something big?
Yeah.
Strap your fucking hair on, right?
Okay, yeah.
This is my favourite film.
Is it?
Yeah, this film, not of all time, just to clarify.
Of all time? Not of all time. This is Todd's favourite film ever.
I will stand by the statement that, for me, Universal Soldier 6, Day of Reckoning, Chinny Reckon, or just Day of Reckoning, I suppose. Universal 6, Day of Reckoning was my favourite Universal Soldier film.
Okay, well, would you like to tell me and our good listeners why? I have a sneaking suspicion why this is your favourite one.
It's because it's basically Friday the 13th, part 13.
Yes, it's a fucking horror film, isn't it?
Yes, mate!
Like, from the get-go, it is... Ooh, it's na-na to the max.
I mean, just to run you guys through some of the awesome horror moments that are thrown in here, we have got Jean-Claude Van Damme in corpse paint, wearing a boiler suit, carrying a machete, sneaking up behind people. We have got a scene in a weird, creepy brothel where a man is paying a woman to hammer nails through his hand.
Yeah.
We have got rooms that are painted with blood and a guy turning up and being like, what happened here? And then discovering terrible dead bodies on the floor. We have got a scene where a POV, point of view perspective scene of a man being beaten to death with a crowbar, where it goes on for, what would you say, 8,000 years?
Like, about 8,000 years seems about right. Yeah, it's like, I didn't like hate it. I don't know if I would say that it's, I think trying to think of what my favourite film is in this franchise is quite difficult because, like the last film, this film is so removed from the original Universal Soldier in, like, just tone, feel, kind of like content, like the whole thing is just like the way it deals with its central character. It is, you're a long way from home.
Yes, and I think part of that might be that, you know, I love your buddy, but I had no special fondness for that home in the first place. You know, I mean, Universal Soldier 1 didn't mean a lot to me in terms of...
It didn't mean a lot to me either, but it's just... So it's not like me being offended at the way that they've treated the property. I am just kind of amazed at, like, how someone took the first film...
Oh, yeah.
And has somehow gotten to where this film is, which I do think is still, it's a fucking roller coaster. It is really like the most like visceral kind of like blood curdling action film I have seen in a long time. And this dude should just do a Hellraiser film, the guy who directed it, because it feels like they wanted it to be. Like the debt of horror that this film has to hop, like, is...
Absolutely. It does still have some kicking action bits in it. Good car chase.
Yeah, I'm not so fast. But the final action scene, we'll get to those bits. So
take us through it. Take
us through. So the beginning of the film, it starts out horror-y as you like, because we get this POV bit of our main character, played by Scott Adkins. He gets woken up in his bed in his home by his daughter saying, "Daddy, there's a monster in the house."
Okay, I'm gonna check it out. Daddy. Right, I'm in the hallway. No monsters. What about the bedroom? Okay. No monsters in the bedroom, sweetie.
Daddy, look in the kitchen.
Okay. Walking down the hallway.
And it's POV. It's quite annoying because they decide to, like, make the screen flicker every time he blinks, which is just very strobey and annoying. And it seems like he's woken up from bed and he's going... It's like, you just woken up, mate. Why are you so out of breath? I have no idea.
Yeah, if any of you people listening have had the opportunity to play the video game Silent Hills before it was removed, this opening sequence is that.
It's like a survival horror at the beginning. Yeah. It's like a cutscene from a horror game.
He's walking through the house, he's breathing, there's shadows. In the distance, you can hear his daughter like crying and being like, "Daddy, they're out there." He's trying doors, he's walking around, like he's all shaking, it's all strobey because of the blinking.
Yeah. And then he's like, "I'm going to go into the kitchen. Oh, hello, there's some lads in here with balaclavas. I wonder what they're..." Oh, fuck!
"Okay, I'm going to the kitchen now. Here we go. What the hell?
They're hitting me in the face with a crowbar, and then you just get this relentless POV bit of this poor guy just getting bludgeoned with a crowbar.
But it's so slow. It's like hit him, and then they walk off, and you're like, "Whoa, it's over." And then he comes back and he hits him again. And then there's like more blood.
And it just goes on like that. And then he's on the floor. He's spitting blood everywhere. You can see his face in like shattered glass on the floor. And they bring the wife and daughter in. And then the main guy with the balaclava takes it off. And it's bloody tired looking Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's looking sleepy, angry.
He's shaved bald.
He's shaved all. He looks pretty terrifying. And he says nothing. He pulls out a gun, shoots the wife in the head.
At which point the main hero guy shouts, "You fucking fuck!"
Yep.
Which is probably quite truthful, but...
And then he points the gun at the little girl. You hear the bang and it goes fade to black. That is the intro sequence to this film. My notes from this are, "I'm sad now." And remember that bit when he learnt how to eat? Remember when that was Universal Soldier?
Well,
you're not getting that here.
Okay, we are a long way from there.
Yeah. So then our main man, Scott Adkins, his character's name is John. He wakes up from a coma, like a 9-month coma in the hospital. An FBI guy comes to question him about what happened to his family. He has a photo and said, "This guy... Did this guy do it?" And has a picture of Luke Devereaux. And then they're kind of... And he doesn't really know anything about it. And they're like, "Well, off you go, mate. Off to your empty home where your murdered family were. Have a laugh." And then ensues about 10 minutes of him walking very slowly everywhere through empty rooms.
Well, he's got like a walking stick. He's picking up all these cuddly toys. This is where he has a weep on the bed with the cuddly toy.
Yeah, and everything just... Oh, it's so slow. The pacing of this film is very slow. It's very ponderous. I know that the director's probably like, "Oh, it's going to be tense. It's going to be emotive. It's going to build suspense." But you are just kind of like, anytime you're ready.
I hear you, because as someone sitting down to watch a Universal Soldier film, at this point, even the tone of the music is like funereal.
Yeah.
You know,
and very moribund.
It's not what I signed up for, brah. I wanted speedboats.
Yeah.
I wanted jump kicks. I wanted some guy to do the splits.
Yeah. But I tell you what you do get in a minute. After that, Mr. Worldwide, Pitbull shows up.
He's playing a different character to the last film.
This is insane.
He's just some bloke.
So this is like you were looking at, like, that he's credited as a different character.
Yeah. He's got a beard in this one. That's how you can tell
He's got a beard, yeah. If you want any explanation as to why, you won't get it. Like, why? Oh,
jog on.
Yeah, it's like, Pitbull's back. Okay, cool. Will there be any reference to... No, there won't. So anyway, he is Pitbull the puking plumber. He is working, as a plumber, and he's fixing some old lady's tap, and then he has some weird flashy stroby thing go on in his brain. He vomits everywhere, and then he just walks off. And where does he go, Todd?
Well, he gets in his van, and I enjoyed the fact that his plumbing van, his plumbing company is called NMP, NM Plumbing, something plumbing. Yeah. Their phone number, Tom, is 555-PIPE.
Nice.
I just enjoyed that. That's a good detail.
Good.
But I'll tell you where. Then he gets in his van. He drives his 555 pipe van off to creepy goth horror brothel.
Yeah, I call it the hell brothel. This is basically a deleted scene from like a very late Hellraiser film. This is where, like Todd was saying, there's like a prostitute hammering a nail just into some lad's hand.
He's just sitting there drinking a beer, not even watching. And she's like, is that enough?
I get the feeling that it's never expressed, but that these guys are unisols. Because otherwise, I mean, I don't want to take a guess at what you're into in a kinky way, Todd, but I'd imagine if you were like, yeah, go on, nail that into my hand, that would be a bit saucy, that you would probably think very, very wrong. You'd be like, that was a bad move. You shouldn't have done that. Can I go to the hospital? This guy's like, don't faze me.
Don't faze him, son. But yeah, we get this weird camera angle where the camera is like in the roof, like slowly panning over, and we look down into all of these different private rooms, and there's all of this fucked up shit going on. At this point in the film, I notice there's like these bright neon lights. They're playing this kind of psychedelic, repetitive, modern, minimal dance music.
Yeah.
Everyone's really oily. Everything's dark and slimy. All these, the neon lights are strobing. And I go, was this film made very shortly after the movie Drive? And we look it up and it was made 1 year later.
Mm.
And then what we get is a scene from Drive.
Yeah, at the end of the hell brothel is our friend Dolph Lundgren.
Big Dolph.
He's in there. He's in there. Obviously, he's gone on a bit of shore leave with some of his other Universal Soldier lads, so some very rough sex. And he's there looking kind of like someone's dad trying to be cool, like at a nightclub. You know, like that thing of like, I'm going out. How do the kids dress? White shirt tucked in with like horrible bleach blonde hair, like really scraped back. It's like, yeah, that's really cool. And he's about to get freaky with this lady, and then Mr. Worldwide, Pitbull, he bursts through the door. He's done plumbing. He's here just to shoot everybody with a very big shotgun.
Kablam!
Which he does like a champ. He gets rid of them all, apart from Dolph. He has a good like fist fight with Dolph, where Dolph gives him the come on hands. That's really nice. They have a bit of scrap, and then Dolph stabs him in the neck
with a syringe,
and then he says something like, I've given you freedom, and then everything goes strobe for about 3 or 4 minutes, and it's very hard to watch.
Now, you know that thing that I occasionally do when I'm complaining about a long scene on the podcast, where I say, oh, that went on for 8,000 mm-hmm. years. Tom is not exaggerating. This strobe light goes on for 3 minutes. Easily 3 minutes. It's just the most intense, bright, flashing light. Dolph staring straight into the barrel of the camera, going, yes, yes, you are mine now. You are free from the government. And then at some point, his face turns into JCVD, who just looks at him and goes, I'm bald now. Look at how bald I am. And then it turns back. But it just goes on. For so long.
Yeah, it's like we were both like watching the film. Well, not trying not to look directly at the screen because it was just burning into our retinas.
Seriously, if you were considering watching this film, if you have epilepsy, do not watch this film.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, it needs a safety warning on it. So what we had to take away from this, which isn't really expressed like very clearly, Pitbull was a unisol being used by the government, and when he vomited under this lady's sink was when the government switched him on, like he was like a sleeper agent and was like, go and kill Dolph Lundgren because he is... I mean, there's something else we have to address. Dolph Lundgren is alive.
Yeah, right. And
he got the back of his head blown out in the last film. And you know... there is never any explanation in this. I know he came back as a clone in the last one.
Could he be a new clone?
He could be a new clone, but no one ever says, oh yeah, Luke Devereaux has now, you know, like he's working with this renegade clone of his character, Scott, from the original film. So it's just like, he's just there and he's working. He is buddy-buddy. Like he's one of JCVD's minions. So this is very different from anything we've ever seen in any other Universal Soldier film. And there is not a jot of explanation for it.
Which I could let slide if it wasn't for the fact that this film has the same director as the last film.
Yes, and then even the fact that, like, Pitbull is back in it, and he... There's no sort of, like, explanation as to, like, oh, yeah, you know that guy from, like, the other film? It's not him. He's got a beard.
He's a plumber now.
Yeah, it's,
It's very strange.
Yeah, it's, Because, I mean, this one is considered, yeah, it's like by the same director, you think, well, this should be a sequel to the last one. But actually, it maybe makes more sense that it's just another standalone sequel to the original. Mm. Although it still wouldn't explain why Dolph Lundgren is alive.
Nothing could
and
ever
working
explain that.
For Jean-Claude Van Damme. It yeah. makes very little sense.
A very small amount of sense. So just to kind of cut to the chase a bit, because this is a very long movie and we
there's
are not
a, lot
a
of,
very, very
no,
long
there's
podcast.
There's not a lot of plot in it, just because all the shots go on forever because half of this film is filmed in slow motion.
Yes, absolutely. Well, what we get through a series of slow motion shots, many of them with strobe in the background, is the fact that JCVD and Big Dolph are now running... basically a cult. They're forming a new religion that's got this occult symbol sort of driving it that many of them have got tattooed on their necks or on their shoulders, which is for ex-Unisols that have been freed from government control by this syringe that Dolph's passing around. And they are planning what they're calling the Day of Reckoning. It's some sort of Unisol revolution.
Yeah.
We get hints that that might just be them, like, fucking up the government. There's some suggestion that it might be something to do with them getting back the power to reproduce. Did you pick up
on
that?
Yeah, I did pick up on that, but it never really fully made sense to me.
They're just broody. They just want babies.
And then there's this other whole bit. It's like in Highlander.
All comes around, baby.
Oh, man. So there's also this bit where Pitbull, now freed, like, by Dolph, stabs John, like, our hero, in the neck to free him of the Unisol mind control. So they go, oh, well, he must be a Unisol. But then he proceeds to then show up about two or three times later in the film to murder him. Which is just kind of like, what's your motivation there, Mr. Worldwide? Why would you free him to try and make him one of your brothers? Which is what they talk about a lot in this film. Like, oh yeah, like you're free of control. And then be like, I'll be back in about 5 minutes to murder you once you've gotten used to this.
Yeah, it's very
but
odd.
We do get some, like, one particularly rad... Well, you get a couple of really rad fight scenes between them.
Or are you talking about the one in the bathroom?
I am. So just to before the one in the bathroom, John goes to meet his dead mate, he's dead. He's like, okay.
Yeah, so he gets a phone call from a guy he knows called Zachary going, hey, John, where have you been? You've been in a coma for 9 months. I haven't been able to reach you. He's like, yeah, I've been in a coma for 9 months. You haven't been able to reach me. He's like, well, I'm in big trouble, man. You got to come over right now. I'm in big trouble. And he goes, okay, well, I'll come over. By the time he gets there, Zachary's dead.
Yeah.
He is brown bread.
And then he finds a matchbook with, like, a number on it for a strip club. He goes there and he meets a girl called Fantasia.
That name again, Tom?
Fantasia.
Yeah, just wanted to check out. I'm completely insane.
Yeah, she's called Fantasia. That's her stripper name. She says, do you know my name? And he goes, it's Fantasia, because he heard the announcer in the strip club say it. And she says, you don't know me at all, do you? She never says what her real name is.
Maybe she just meant don't know him as a person.
Yeah, she's like, I have a last name.
Yeah, it's Fantasia McGee.
Damn. Mud on his face. So he goes to her because I think he's trying to, like, it becomes like a mystery kind
this
of thing.
This is where
he's trying to figure out who killed his family, who he is, because he has all these memory gaps and he feels that she can help. They go back to her place and then Mr. Worldwide shows up. And what does he have with him, Todd? What does he have in his hand?
It's rad.
Yeah.
It's little.
Yeah.
It's a rad little chopper.
Oh.
He's got an axe.
Bloody big fire axe. And then they proceed to absolutely trash everything. John gets two of his fingertips cut off.
Boom. Brutal.
Then John gets the axe and he chops off half of Pitbull's foot.
even more brutal.
And then they fuck off.
And Fantasia ends the fight by running into the bathroom. She picks up the top of the toilet, like the lid of the cistern, this yeah. huge big piece of porcelain, and just smashes it on Pitbull's head. Boom. Mr. Yeah. Worldwide, good night.
Yeah. Not so international now, are you?
Hey.
And they go on the run. Nothing much happens until Pitbull shows up again and tries to kill them again. And then they have a fight in a sporting goods store. Oh, my God. This scene is... there's lots of baseball bat on baseball bat, like sword fight action.
Why have I never seen a fight in a sporting goods store before? This is amazing.
Yeah, it was perfect. Pitbull picks up a bowling ball and throws it at John. John just punches it out of the sky and it explodes. He then picks up one of those massive weights that you put on a pair of like...
like a barbell.
Yeah, like a barbell. Like picks up the weight, throws it like a frisbee into Pitbull's balls.
Barbell to the dick.
And then how does it finish?
It finishes because John gets the biggest baseball bat that there is, and he hits Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide, in the side of the head, and the top half of his head explodes.
See, these scenes, I am on board with you, like, about this being like, this is like one of the better. Like,
yeah, like, it's not a shooty man movie. It's a murdery man movie.
It is. Yeah, like the axe fight and this are just like, oh. And like in this film, Pitbull has started just bellowing. Like every time he hits someone, he just goes, ah! He's just really throwing it in. He's just like really getting stuck into it.
Oh, it's strong. It's strong action and I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
And so the background story that's kind of happening around these bits is where we leave the heavily Drive-influenced bit of this film and we move into what I like to call the Lost Highway era, because this is where John starts to doubt his sanity. And he moves into like a seedy, slightly surreal, David Lynch-infused underbelly. Because people keep telling him he's lost his memory and he's like, who am I? And they're like, oh yeah, I saw you. You were like murdering a man in the car park because he'd looked at you funny and we couldn't get you to stop and you just disappeared. Oh, I know you. You're like the most powerful drug dealer in town. You used to sell like crazy shit down by the docks. I know you. Here's like a mysterious key to a shipping crate with your name on it. He goes to go see the shipping crate. It's gone. But they're like, oh, you got to go see Mr. Castellano. He's in charge of what gets sent up and down the river. Goes to see Mr. Castellano. Mr. Castellano is like a creepy, like 1920s anachronistic gangster with like a fucked up lumpy face, like something out of Eraserhead.
It's all covered in scar tissue.
Yeah. And he is scared of John and he's like, no, I can't take another beating. Leave me alone, John. And then he shows John a video of John murdering John's mate Zachary at the start of the film, at which point he has like a psychotic break and it's like, Lost Highway, who am I? Am I in a fugue state? What's going on? I'm just gonna drive. I'm all nihilistic. I don't even know what's real anymore.
Ooh, it's a bit mental, isn't it?
And this is, you know, it's slow paced. The dude directing this film is not David Lynch. Mm. It does not have Marilyn Manson in it. It does not have Henry Rollins in it. It does not have a soundtrack by Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
It is not Lost Highway. It will not be quite as good. But it's still not bad.
Yeah. And the only thing is, at this point, we're like over halfway through the film. Jean-Claude Van Damme has barely been in. Jean-Claude Van Damme is more like Pinhead from Hellraiser than he is like Luke Devereaux from Universal Soldier 1. He just shows up in like spooky dream sequences being all bald and not saying anything.
There's even a bit where John is looking at himself in the mirror being like, am I crazy? And then his reflection turns into Jean-Claude Van Damme, who reaches out of the mirror, grabs him by the side of the head and just stares at him.
Oh, and then he has another vision of the girl, his daughter, getting shot again. Because you've got to have that in the film again. Might as well have like, you know, like a six-year-old getting shot in the face twice in the film.
Why not?
And it, again, like, we're quite a long way through the film and you're still kind of like, so what is happening? Why is Luke Devereaux, the hero of the franchise, being like, why is he the villain? Why did he kill this guy's family for no reason?
Well, then we move into the Friday the 13th portion of the
movie. Yes.
When John takes Fantasia to his spooky, creepy swampland cabin.
Yeah, which she said, like, she was like, oh, I used to go to your house. And he's like, you went to my house? What, with my wife and kids? He's like, no, I went to your, like, murder shack in the middle of the bayou. So they go and find that. You go in, like, the walls are, like, painted with faces. It's super creepy. It's really, like, true detective-y kind of looking stuff. And then who pops out behind a corner? It's a clone of John.
Booyah!
And at which point you're like, ha-ha-ha? What? Excuse me? Because obviously, like, the idea of cloning was already introduced in the last one, because that's how Dolph showed up. And Dolph is back. But there's been so little kind of... I mean, this film would be very unforgiving for anyone that has ever seen any of the other Universal... hasn't seen any of the other Universal Soldier films. Apart from it doesn't have anything to do with any of the other Universal Soldier films. But you're just kind of like, what, is cloning a thing still? Where did this guy come from? There are clones. There are John clones.
There are clones, people.
That's just... Deal with it. You're just going to have to just shut up and get on with the fact that there's an evil John clone. And... it was this clone that knew Fantasia. This was the clone that fucked up his old boss in the shipping yard.
He was running amok. He became like a real bigwig in the underworld of the city. It was the bad clone.
And he was...
Regular John, our John, is fine. And the new John...
He killed the mate.
Yes, so it transpires. What I'm going to do to try and make this less confusing for you is, like, John is, like, how I will describe our hero, and I will describe the clone that we've found in the murder shack as John.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so John goes to the shack, he finds John. John gives a big monologue saying that he was working for JCVD.
Mm-hmm.
JCVD wanted, like, him to do a bunch of stuff. He wanted him to go, like, murder Zachary, like, do all of this, like, underworld stuff. At a certain point, John decided to have enough of it, and he just stopped.
Mm. And he's just been hanging out in that shack.
He's just been hanging out. He's like, I've had enough. I'm done.
Mm.
And so then John kills John,
I think, because John tries to kill Fantasia.
Yeah.
And then, so he shoots John, and then he's like, you're free now, Fantasia. I'm off down at the secret base down the river. Oh, yeah, because we forgot to mention that John sounds like Jason Statham.
Oh, yeah, he's British.
Yeah, he's like, all right, oh, it's Universal Soldier, innit? So
I'm a Cajun.
Yeah, raging Cajun. I'll guarantee. So he then gets in a speedboat. He finds out from Evil John, where to find JCVD. He takes a very leisurely boat ride in slow motion, of course, down the bayou. And
this is the slowest speedboat that has ever been filmed.
And he finds the Unisol base full of all the renegade Universal Soldiers. And throughout the film, we've had little cuts to them of, like, Dolph Lundgren giving them big, like, motivational speeches about nothing.
Well, he's, like, preaching. It's very culty, religious, very culty. Yeah.
With each passing day, we grow stronger, digging deeper into the outside world. Unnoticed, we live among them like ghosts, biding our time, waiting for the moment when our oppressors shall be forced to kneel before us and pay for their sins.
And then we meet, there's like a scientist there who says, like, oh, your memories of your family aren't real. They were implanted by the government to drive you to be like a killer that doesn't think of their own, that's driven by hate.
It's specifically because what happened was, this is the big reveal, guys. JCVD, with his, like, renegade Unisol revolution, not necessarily a bad guy. He's fine. He's a fine guy. He's trying to rescue Universal Soldiers and liberate them from government control so they don't do any more evil bidding on the behalf of the government, right? He's just trying to like rescue Universal Soldiers and have them live their own lives and not bother anybody. John, our hero, is a Universal Soldier as well. He's only a few months old. He's like, there's this bit where he's like, you're a newborn, but you're born a grown man. He had the memories of his family implanted, where they implanted these fake memories of JCVD murdering his family, so that when he came online, he's like, I have to find Jean-Claude Van Damme and kill him.
Yeah.
And that's why, it's because the government want JCVD and his plan stopped.
Yeah.
But they needed it done by a guy who had free will. They didn't really quite explain why. They didn't want to just program... Oh, that's why. They didn't want to just program him and, like... program him to kill Jean-Claude Van Damme, because they know that they've got those syringes that reverse that programming. They needed him to want to do it. And that's why they have the fake memories.
Yeah. And then this doctor is like, you're in pain. These memories give you pain. It's not real. Would you like me to get rid of those memories? And then John goes, yeah, that'd be nice, please. He's like, okay, cool. Well, here's how we're going to do that.
Oh, God, guys.
We're going to strap you to a table.
Oh, no.
And then we're going to get a fucking massive drill.
Don't do that.
And we're going to put it right through the middle of your forehead. Blood's going to go absolutely everywhere. Then we'll, you think it's done, we'll take the drill out, and then we'll get like a bit of an old coat hanger, and we're going to stick it in the hole and just go...
just have a good rummage around.
Yeah, because... Lord knows brain surgery is not a delicate science. You can just fucking have a jab around. Does that feel better to you, John?
This bit is brutal.
Oh, it's fucking hard. And then like John's there going, no, no. And he's getting visions of his family. And then he kind of hulks out.
Yep, smashes up the chair, breaks out of his leather bonds.
And then we have this, and you're kind of like, is it because he can't let go of the memory of this family that may or may not be real? I guess that's what's happening. And he just kind of like hulks out.
Picks up a hammer, smashes the doctor's head in one single blow.
Yeah, and then you get this continuous shot action sequence, which is pretty gnarly, where he's just walking through this underground cave system, just murdering the shit out of all these Universal Soldiers.
One at a time, it's so good.
It's good. It's a good action scene.
There's this really, really amazing bit with one of the Universal Soldiers who's got like a little handgun, and like John does this thing where he like goes behind him, snaps his arm. He like breaks his arm at the midpoint between the elbow and the wrist. He like bends it backwards so that it's like pointing back on itself, and then pulls the trigger so that the guy's like backwards arm shoots himself in the head. Snap!
Yeah. He fights his way to a room which has Dolph Lundgren in it. So it's kind of like a mid-level boss where you got Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, he's the mini boss. He's got like his little floppy red communist beret on.
Yeah, they have a big old knife fight, a bit of a gun fight. And then he kills Dolph by sticking a machete through the bottom of his head up through the top.
You know that bit just behind your chin, between your chin and your Adam's apple, if you've got an Adam's apple, or where your Adam's apple would be if you had one? That soft bit there. That's where the machete goes. Bam! Straight up.
Yeah. And then he goes and finds Jean-Claude Van Damme, who has now painted himself up like a spooky skull. Says a few words.
Not many.
I mean, I think that there's a pay grade here. Like, if you want Jean-Claude Van Damme to show up and, like, look sleepy and do one action sequence, that costs this much money. And then he will charge you like a grand per word that you want to add on top of that. Because obviously he's a serious actor. And, you know, he just does like the action-y stuff just for bread and butter. But if you want like the real, the chops, the acting chops, you've got to pay. And that is why he does not say a lot in this film. And so he then like says like, I didn't kill your family. That was all implanted by the government. And then...
John can't let it go.
And, like, John is doubting it. And this is the thing all the way to the end of the film, that you never actually really know whether or not this family was real.
I mean, pretty sure they weren't.
I'm pretty sure they weren't, but he, for some reason, will not...
Well, he can't. A memory's a memory,
bro. Yeah, memory's a memory. And then...
reality is perception.
A big, badass fight with Jean-Claude Van Damme. In this kind of in the culty church,
Which is kind of cool because, like, us as viewers, we're kind of rooting for both of them, right? Because we know that John's motives are pure. We know that he's very confused and the family may or may not be real. But we also, at this point, we know that JCVD is not really a baddie. He's just trying to liberate the Unisols and not really hurt anybody.
Yeah, but then it never really, we never really find out much about what he was planning to do. Like, there's a lot of question marks in this film about, you know, like, where did Dolph come from? Like, why is any of this happening? Like,
yeah,
what are Jean-Claude Van Damme's motivations? But John gets the better of JCVD.
Well, what actually happens is they're grappling. John's got the Jason Voorhees machete.
Mm-hmm.
He generally, like, he points it towards JCVD's stomach. JCVD blocks it.
Yeah.
Then he looks at him with that sleepy look and he just goes, you know what, mate? Fuck it.
Okay, just, see you soon.
See you soon. And he just lets him stab him in the stomach.
Mm.
And as he's dying, he looks John right in the eyes and he says, there is no end. Always another John. Which means, as we find out a little bit later, we know that this isn't even the first time that the government have sent an assassin like this after him. We yes. know that it won't be the last. You've commented on how sleepy JCVD looks. He's tired, man.
Yeah,
he's lived
enough.
A long time.
He has.
He's just trying to, like, get free from, like, the mind control from the government. He knows he can't do it, and he's just like, fuck it.
Fair enough. Yo, Luke out.
Luke out.
I guarantee I will not be back for the next film.
And he dies. He dies for real.
He dies for
which
real.
Which is really, like, what? That's also maybe slightly why, one of the reasons why I really enjoyed this one so much.
Mm.
It's a fitting end to the bitter end. It is a real end. So
yeah.
quite a lot of these franchises we've watched didn't really feel like they had real endings, you know? When we're watching the franchise, the last film doesn't necessarily tie things up in a bow. This movie has a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of open-ended things. Ties a bow under JCVD.
Yes, the Luke Devereaux story ends and John's story is left kind of like hanging because he now becomes the leader of the Unisol cult. He goes and murders the FBI agent that he met at the beginning of the film.
I want to talk about this bit a little bit, if that's okay.
Please do.
Because, yes, you're right, Tom. After he's killed JCVD, all of the other Unisol, like, cult members come in. They look at him. They look like they're going to attack him. And then they bow their heads. He is their new leader. Then, cut. It's like daylight. We're out in the woods. John has driven out to the woods and he meets the FBI guy who was there at the start when he woke from the coma, being like showing him the picture and being like, this is the guy. This is the guy that murdered your family. Meets him and he's like, we'll always find each other like a couple of wild dogs. They chat a bit. The FBI guy was like, hey man, look, I'm not a bad guy. You could say that I killed your family. Let's say that I gave them life because they wouldn't have existed if I hadn't have implanted those memories.
Mm.
John pulls out a gun. Cold clocks him in the face. Blam! Splatters all over the windshield. It's totally brutal. And then what follows is it's one of the last moments of the whole franchise.
Mm.
You know, it's like right before the credits roll. And it's a really special moment, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's quite tender.
I see.
I would describe it as one of Todd's moments of tenderness from Universal Soldier 6, Day of Reckoning. What follows after the FBI guy has been shot is a bit of a stunning turnaround because the car that the FBI guy had, which was like a big Escalade, door opens, bunch more big, burly Universal Soldier dudes get out, like loads of them just keep coming out. It's like a clown car. They look at the body. Then an exact clone of that FBI guy gets
yeah.
out of the car, goes into the FBI guy's original car, and drives off with it. He's like, I'm just going to take that home. We're like, whoa, which was the original? How many more of these guys are there? It's like, this is some Men in Black shit.
Mm.
And then the bit that's tender is just the way that these Universal soldiers pick up the dead FBI guy's body.
Yeah.
Fold him up real nice. Put him in the back seat of the car. Tuck him up. And drive him off. Now, I'm going to level with you. This movie was probably like the most macho one of those.
Yeah, I was going to say, there weren't a lot of tender moments in there, were there?
There were not.
There were not.
So
the moments of family togetherness involved bloody murder. So
yes.
There was not a lot of...
It's just the way I like to think of them on set shooting it, where you've got all of these big, huge, like mixed martial artist type guys in the back of the car. They're filming it and they're like, what do you want us to do, Mr. Director? And they're like, okay, sit there. And then when I say go, can you look really sad, pick up this weedy little old bloke who is about half the size of your leg. All of you just really carefully put him in the back of the car like you like him.
Mm.
And they're like, we what? Like, we what, mate?
You what?
Like you like him. Can you pretend that you like him and put him in the car? I'll give it a go.
And they did.
They gave it a go. And what? I would call it a 7 out of 10 effort.
Good for them.
I quite liked it.
And then that's how the film ends. This whole thing that, like, that now maybe John has a clone of the FBI guy on the inside of the FBI and he's running the Unisol cult. And how did he get a clone of the FBI guy and what is going on? It doesn't matter because the credits are rolling.
Done.
That's it. There's no more films.
We did it, Tom. High five. Yay.
All right.
That's the bitter end, baby.
Yeah. It was a very interesting film. Like, it's not a bad film. It's just, just so different. So I think if you're interested in these films, it's worth watching. I mean, I think they're all, in a way, like, if you're going to start watching the Universal Soldier films, then you should watch them all just to be kind of like, what, this is all meant to be the same thing?
Yeah.
It's a weird one. I mean, we will save this for the wrap-up episode next time, but just, you know, like, yeah. The director should just make some horror films, because...
I hope he does.
I think he'd probably do pretty well at it, because he makes... I mean, you were saying that IMDb actually has this classed as a horror film.
Yeah. The genre listing on IMDb said it was action, horror, mystery, which seems legit.
Yeah, totally.
And I would say that if you've seen just the first one, none of the others, and you have a passing interest in horror films, I think you're well within your rights to just skip straight to this last one.
Oh yeah, totally.
You don't need to have seen any of the others.
It bears so little. There's so little about it that you need to know from the original.
Yeah.
Even the one before it, I don't even believe that. Like the last one, which is meant to also be canonical, doesn't have anything to do with this.
Fuck no.
Absolutely nothing. As far as I'm concerned, there are just like a lot of individual... There's a lot of standalone sequels to the first film. But let's talk about that next time. Because, next time we'll be doing the wrap-up.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the episode where we go back through the franchise as a whole, talk about how all the movies relate to each other, how they don't relate to each other. We're going to probably talk a little bit about the Universal Soldier video game.
Mm.
We're going to talk about, you know, the how it bleeds into other types of media. And that is also the episode where we're going to reveal the results of our poll, which I'll very briefly mention now. It's not too late. If you're listening to this, if you've got your podcast feed and you can see that this is the most recent episode, if when you're listening to this, there are no more episodes after this one, it means you can still vote in our poll for what we're going to cover for season 5. So if you go to any of our social feeds, either Facebook at Bitter End Pod or Twitter at Bitter End Pod, scroll to the top, there's a pinned post with a link for a very, very short, very quick, easy poll you can fill in, which will let you vote for what we'll cover for season 5, which will either be Nightmare on Elm Street, Fast and the Furious, or Air Bud. And we will reveal the results for that next time.
Yeah, just get in there quick, because we'll have to take it down when we record that episode. So just, you know, don't muck about.
This is your last chance, peeps.
Yeah, so that will be next week. But before we head down that dusty highway out of season 4 onto season 5, let's have another little trip to story time.
Yay!
Yes. So, for the penultimate time, because I will be reading another extract in our final episode next week.
Thank God.
I am reading from the Universal Soldier novelization, written by Robert Tyne, based on the screenplay by Dean Devlin. Now, it has been a dark and brooding watch this week, Todd. So, I thought I would lighten the mood with certainly what is one of my favourite scenes from the first Universal Soldier film. Here in prose form. So
I'm so excited.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a little bit of story time with Tomney D. When the waitress returned to remove the wreckage of the two plates of food, she flipped out her order pad. Can I get you something else? Coffee? Dessert? Luke studied the menu. I'd like two orders of meatloaf. She looked at him warily. Meatloaf was not generally considered dessert in this place. Two meatloaf, she repeated, jotting it down. Anything else? A club sandwich, an order of pork chops, string beans, salad, soup, and this. He pointed at some unfamiliar, unpronounceable words on the menu. Huevos rancheros? That's right. Anything else? A bowl of chili. You got quite an appetite, don't you? Yes, said Luke. As one of the waitresses delivered a steaming plate of fried chicken to the table, she looked at Luke and shook her head. Amazing. It's just amazing you don't have a weight problem, son. Luke attacked the chicken as if it were the first food he'd seen in days. I am very active, he said between giant bites. I'll bet you are, darling. Luke turned back to his food. I'm kind of afraid to ask, said the waitress, but will there be anything else? Steak and eggs. A bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. And chicken fried steak. Mashed potatoes with that? Yes, please. You know, said the waitress, I had a feeling you'd say that. The truckers who'd been watching Luke from the counter of the diner decided that they might be able to have a little fun at his expense. The plate of steak and eggs and the chicken fried steaks were sitting in the service hatch, waiting for one of the overworked waitresses to pick them up and deliver them to Luke. One of the men elbowed his buddy in the ribs. You know, I think he might need some extra seasoning. The trucker unscrewed the top of a full bottle of Tabasco sauce and poured the red liquid fire all over the steak and eggs, emptying it to the last drop. Let's see what this does for his appetite, he said with a broad wink. His companion howled with laughter. One of the waitresses grabbed the plate and placed it before Luke. He dove into the food, gobbling, unfazed by the hot sauce. The truckers stared flabbergasted. I don't believe it, said the prankster. I should have put two bottles on it. Look, said the waitress, before I get you another thing, I want to know if you're good for it. You're running up a hell of a check here, mister. Good for it? Asked Luke, confused by the question. What does that mean? It means, do you have any money? Money? You know, money. She rubbed her thumb across her fingertips. Money, dollars, moolah. She had noted his accent and wondered if he were Mexican. After all, the border wasn't all that far away. Of course, he didn't know how to pronounce huevos rancheros, but she changed languages anyway. You know, dinero. We'll have a little bit more story time next week.
That was a heady brew, Tom. That was a heady brew of nostalgia for that classic scene in the movie.
But so much more to it.
So much added. You know, a little bit of casual racism spiced in there. it was baffling. It was intriguing. It was captivating. I loved it.
Much like the original scene, but just a very different take. I don't remember the Tabasco sauce prank.
No, that's new, but I liked
and
it.
I love the idea of being like, hang on a minute, could he be Mexican? Like, we've already had to try and swallow that he is a Cajun. I do not know if I can take that anyone would conceive that Jean-Claude Van Damme as Luke Devereaux is Mexican.
Hello. Welcome to Acapulco.
Buenas dias. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, see you soon.
See you soon. So, we'll leave you with that, folks. Won't you join us next time when we here at the Bitter End discuss the end of the Universal Soldier franchise. It'll be the wrap-up.
Yeah, we'll attempt to tie a bow on this big, messy baby of a franchise. And we'll open the doorway for what we'll be doing next.
So, I do not know what that will be. Todd does.
I've been watching the results from the polls come pouring in. And let me tell you, I guarantee it will be interesting. thanks for listening, guys, as always. And we will catch your punk asses next week.
See you soon.